Welcome to the latest episode of The Race Has Won Everything. I'm Scratch, joining is my trusty co-host, Base Defenian.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Well, I thought the news would slow down a little bit, but it seems to have just ramped up all of a sudden this week.
A little bit. I don't have quite as much prep as per usual, but nonetheless.
I mean, this, for some reason we have a decent amount of immigration news, which I thought would not come for a little bit.
No, you wouldn't think so. Should we start with the Labour reshuffle, though?
Yes.
And then we'll sort of... We'll get onto that when we get onto the little, you know, public tussle that is happening between Peter Dutton and Christina Keneally. But as we know, Keneally was already promoted to the front bench because good old Ed Husic stepped down for her.
He was being a real man.
Yep, he's contributing to the diversity of the Labour Party by being an Islamic man from West Sydney making room for an American white woman.
Yep.
as Mark Latham said on Twitter the other day. Okay, so anyway, let's look at what we've got here.
Well, I mean, after Ed Husic's legendary routing of Hussar.
Oh, yeah, right.
Allegedly.
Okay, anyway, so who's in here? I think, we covered this last week anyway. Richard Marles does have the deputy leadership. He also takes on defence. Chris Bowen, not too surprising that he has been moved from his economic portfolio of Treasury over to Health. I think that was a fairly wise move for them, given that, you know, he sort of tarnished his own economic credentials with the franking credits and so forth.
Now he can go become Dr. House or Dr. Cox from Scrubs or something like that.
Yeah, and he can tell people if you don't like your doctor, don't get treatment or something like that. Just stay at home. Okay, so there's not too many surprises of what we got here. Shorten was given NDIS. Now, I think he was a little disappointed here because he wanted to have either Foreign Affairs or Health, I think. He had some, like, preferred ones, but he's been given this portfolio, which I have to admit I didn't even know existed before. I think it may be a new one. So, yeah, he's got this one. I suppose this is simply a one where it's like, where's the funding, you know? Yeah. That's all you've got to hammer them about. So it seems straightforward enough.
Well, I don't know how many, if you will have to do like little photo ops with Jordan Steele John or any time soon.
Oh, Jesus. No.
I mean, that's a bit of a, we can't have two disabled people.
I'd love to just chase that guy around with a wet newspaper or something and just see how fast he can go on his wheelchair.
In Minecraft.
Yeah, of course. Now, unsurprisingly, Jim Chalmers got Treasury. He, of course, is actually touted as like a future Labour leader. The issue at the moment, I think, is just that he's not high profile enough. However, getting a promotion like this, he did have finance before. You know, he could well be a deputy later because I kind of think that Treasury is like the honorary deputy position. You know what I mean?
It is in like our political context since the 80s, essentially.
Right, because, I mean, when Julie Bishop
was
dumped...
Well, even since, like, some of, like, the 60s, because, I mean, what's his name? If it wasn't Billy McMahon a treasurer?
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, Treasury was absorbed into the office of Prime Minister for a lot. Like, Ben Chifley, I think, held both portfolios.
Well, I mean, it made sense with Chifley, because what was his, like, a big policy? Bank nationalisation.
Yeah, I want the banks. That was the last time the Labour Party ever, like, proposed to nationalise something, by the way.
Yeah, now, since then, it's always been privatising stuff. I don't know.
That's right. What's with that? Yep. So, look, Jim Chalmers, I don't know if you've seen much of
besides
him.
Besides Mark McGowan with the fucking yabbies.
Yeah, right.
Lobster fishing.
Yeah. But Chalmers is actually very slick. I don't know if you've seen much of him in the media. But he's certainly, like, on par with Chris Bowen. He's a very smooth talker, very, very well spoken. So I don't think it'll actually take him long to get his profile up there. I believe he is from the right faction as well.
Well, he's from Queensland. He has to represent some, like, right
wing. Yeah. So, and, you know, I think that being from the right faction but not being from New South Wales can be somewhat beneficial.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of... I mean, that's partially how WA was Labor in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, yeah, because it's like, look, we've got a guy on the right, but he, at the same time, he's not associated with Sussex Street, so yeah, we can get behind him. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think that if...
And he supports, like, an actual productive industry like mining or farming.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Graham Campbell or something.
Well, I mean, he was kind of talking about the need for Labor to have a very clear plan and stance on Adani, unlike the one that Albo is putting out there, you know, where he's saying that he's open to it, but he's still not saying, like, what the official policy is, which must be incredibly frustrating for many in the party. So, if there is a, you know, a threat to his leadership at any point, I think it would either come from Chalmers or from Bowen, not from Shorten. Now, I don't know if you saw, but it was reported in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. I think it was Hot Chocolate Latika Burke who broke the story, that apparently those close to Shorten said that he still has his eye on the leadership. He went straight on Twitter when that story broke and said, no, I don't. And Albo has my full support and all that. I don't know. I don't think that former leaders ever really, like, kind of lose their ambitions. No. For the leadership, you know, they always want it.
Unless it's something like really, really defeating, like Keating or Howard when they lost.
Yeah, but I mean, well, that's when you lose from government. That's a different story. Unless you're Menzies, you're not really going to come back, you know. He was the last person to ever do that. It wasn't too, like, uncommon back in the day. Alfred Deakin actually came back twice.
Well, Stanley Bruce also had a bit of a comeback himself, even though he... Well, not Stanley Bruce, Joseph Lyons, I should say.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, nowadays, I don't see it happening. But I honestly think that given the Labor Party airbrushing Shorten out of their social media and everything, and also the fact that they're just so angry with him for losing what was said to be the unlosable election, I don't see it happening. Even if he does harbour leadership ambitions, I don't see it. Don't see it happening. Look, everything else was not really a surprise. A hell of a lot of people just maintained what they had. Fitzgibbon with agriculture, Penny Wong, foreign affairs, Dreyfus with attorney general, etc., etc. We've got about the same amount of women in the shadow cabinet.
50-50.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we've got more because, of course, you know, Husic. And one other guy stepped down as well, I can't remember, but Husic obviously to make way for Keneally. Okay.
Right.
Now, speaking of Keneally, of course, she is taking on Home Affairs and also Immigration and Citizenship, which means that she's actually the shadow to two ministers, to Peter Dutton and to David Coleman. No, have I got that right?
Yeah, it's David Coleman.
It is David Coleman, okay. It's just whenever I say that, I think, no, I'm not thinking of David Cole.
Cole Stein,
am I? I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, that is actually his name. Okay, so they had a bit of a public tussle here. Now, Dutton, of course, went after her for being unqualified. I think that's fair enough. She is, what, a journalist and a New South Wales premier for about 5 minutes. She doesn't really have any experience here. But more to the point, she has written for The Guardian before as a journalist, and she said that she opposed offshore processing and said, no, let's just bring them to Australia. All right. She also had called on the government to implement a royal commission into offshore processing and detention. So she now says that, no, she doesn't oppose any of that stuff. But then again, so does Albo, who voted against it at the 2015 National Conference for the Labor Party, which was actually against Bill Shorten's wishes. So I think that we still have a fairly left-wing sort of stance from the Labor Party on these issues. Perhaps, you know, we always did, you know, let's remember it was brought to a, or at least both turnbacks, you know, were brought to an end by Rudd. And of course we had 1,200 drownings under them. Mm. What an anti-Brown policy we had under Kevin 07. But I do think, you know, the extent to which they support offshore processing is tactical and also...
Well, I mean, like, look, you, it's like, look, gay, just wait, like... free mumps you'll get in Australia. You'll get the free welfare. You'll get a good, like free apartment in Melbourne or Sydney. You know, just wait 3 months. Yeah.
No, no, high rise in Queensland. Remember they're doing that? They were turfing people out.
And, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I mean, I honestly think that by virtue of Australia's geography, that even the Labor Party gets mugged by reality when it comes to things like people drowning at sea. You know, they're like, shit, it just doesn't work. You know, it's not like we're another country and you just get kind of swarms of people turning up at the border. In our case, people actually die, you know, and that sort of keeps Labor in check.
Well, it's also not like Europe where you can just like pay an NGO to like actually do it.
Right, yeah. I mean, here it's actually an illegal people smuggler trade that's, you know, primarily run in Indonesia and Sri Lanka, you know, which Dutton has been on the case of recently, actually. But I just wanted to say, you know, people have been saying, oh, you know, this is like a taste of things to come, like, you know, the fireworks we're going to see between the two. Well, they're actually in different houses, okay? Keneally's in the Senate and Dutton's in the House. So it, you know, we're not going to see certainly any parliamentary drama. It's just going to be barbs traded through the media, unfortunately. I would say that would have been really good, you know, if they were facing off in the same house, because I think the Parliament has become a much more mundane and boring place.
Yeah, like, exactly. I mean, Dutton is a pretty decent debater himself and a good good riler-upper in comparison to, like, certain other people.
And, you know, for the first time since Mark Latham, the Labor Party actually have somewhat of a head-kicker opposition leader, somewhat. You know, I remember Beazley tried it for a little while and it just didn't work. It came off like really fake. But, you know, Albo is seen as like one of those old school street fighters. And he can be.
Which character is he?
Yeah, not Guile, I don't think. More like E. Honda, probably.
Yeah, definitely. Say.
Especially with all that like excess neck fat that he's got at the moment. Yeah, you're right. I noticed like just how much weight Albo's put on in recent years. Actually, the suit really hides it, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's also like, he's not too tall, is he?
No, he's not. No. But anyway, we'll wait and see till Parliament resumes to see what's going on. So anyway, moving on to Dutton. He has also gone over to Sri Lanka because he does believe that we're going to have like a new wave of boat arrivals coming. And there was actually one the other day intercepted by Border Patrol that had 41 people on it and it was leaking. It was about to sink. So, yeah, I mean, we're seeing that again. And good old Dutton, he's facing this issue straight off. You know, these are powers that he still retains under Home Affairs, unfortunately.
Well, he can kick people out and keep people out, but he can't just say how many.
Yeah, I still...
In, you know?
I don't think... He doesn't have power to, like, cancel visas anymore either, though. This is more like sort of Border Patrol stuff, you know? And doing diplomacy with other countries.
And home security.
Yes, yeah. Coleman is the one that, you know, has the power to say, nah, don't like your visa application, I'm ruling it out. That's it. You don't get in. Or, you know, my favorite is when people take a holiday and he cancels their visa.
Yeah.
Like he did with that Chinese guy who they tried to link to Dutton for doing favors for. Well, it turned out Dutton actually canceled the guy's visa when he was out of the country. Okay, did you have anything else on Dutton and all that?
Oh, well, the whole Keneally thing, she was trying to go after Morrison for, well, not Morrison, for Dutton for allowing people smugglers in by planes. Where she's going, in the past 4 years, the number of people claiming asylum arriving by plane had risen to more than 81,000.
Okay, well, look, the first thing to say about that is that planes generally don't crash. These boats very, very often sink. So, you know, if we're actually going to go DR3 here, you have to look at it as a humanitarian issue, you know? And yes, you know, even right-wing race haters like us, no, not really, you know, we say that you need to have kind of a zero-tolerance policy to actually deter the boats from turning up in the first place. Otherwise, you do get drownings. That's the first thing to say about it. The second thing is that, you know, it's not a border patrol issue. People who come through planes, they go through security checks. People who come by boat don't, okay? Now, look, I do agree that the government does have to start cracking down on this as well. You know, I want to see...
Yeah, they don't bother on visa overstays, and that's been a common thing over...
Yeah, definitely. I want to see them crack down on that. And, you know, I want to see a zero tolerance policy here as well, which is if you actually attempt to enter Australia illegally by plane, then you also are guaranteed not to ever settle here, you know, because if you come here by boat, that's currently the way it is. You will not be settled here, you know, unless you get, like, refugee status and all that kind of thing. I want to see a zero-tolerance policy there as well. But for Keneally to actually equate the two is pretty stupid. They're two very different things.
Well, it's like it's just grasping at straws at this point for, you know. I mean, like, what is it? Okay, so are you going to stop the crackdown on these planes, Keneally?
That's the other thing, because they've been doing that for a long time. A few months ago, like, we covered how Channel 7 actually covered that. Like, oh, you know, like, plane arrivals have gone up. And then the Labor Party goes like, oh, yeah, that's shocking. It's like, okay, what's your policy on it? Mm. They have none. I've never seen anything from the Labor Party except for stuff on, like, very, very small, like, tinkering with work visas, you know, when it comes to actually cutting immigration or, God forbid, cutting immigration by plane, you know, illegal immigration by plane. I've seen nothing from them.
Yeah, like a 2,457 visas just because the CFMEU was like shouting at them enough. But
right,
what else is like? Oh, nothing, because you know their constituents tend to want it.
Oh, absolutely, they do. Just like they want Adani, by the way. CFMEU is one of the biggest backers of starting Adani.
And that's the funny thing, because you don't have to probably. The eventual strategy of the Liberal Party will have to be to court the CFMEU.
Yes, yeah, I know. That would be great.
But, you know, that's something that's not in the works for a couple of years, for a couple of election cycles, in my opinion.
Probably not, no.
Except for, like, slight opportunism when they want to open a mine.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
And when it does, I mean, it's a Labor government, like in WA, where all these mining jobs are getting filled by foreigners.
Yeah. Okay.
And just a bit, like, final bit on immigration, because we've got not only immigration ministers, we have the population minister, Alan Tudge, who, you know, figures from the Department of Home Affairs show non-regional skilled migration visas have risen every year on the coalition. And, you know, while those dedicated to the regions dropped from a high of 20,510 in 2012-2013 to 10,198 in 2016-17... But he's like, despite the aim, budget figures show more than 270,000 temporary and permanent migrants will arrive in Australia in 2019, up from 259,000. This figure is 40,000 more than was forecast in last year's budget, representing 15% blowout. So it's not...
For God's sake, we're supposed to have a 30,000 annual...
Oh, but my fellow Goyim, you know, that's only the permanents, temporaries, which can become permanents the year after. Yeah, that's just gonna fill the gap.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, like, when you look at it, it's about almost 900,000 people a year when you look at temporary visas and that. If you look at it on net figures, then it's about 900,000 a year.
Like, what do you mean net? Is that just like? With not considering like departures.
Yeah. So look, I mean, obviously a few of them. Yeah. Well, okay. If you look at it in terms of departures and then the people who replace them, it's around 480,000.
Mm.
But yeah, the amount of people who like actually come back and forth is about 900,000. But yeah, we're looking at like a net. Yeah, this is the way I should have worded it. The net like increase. Is about 500,000 a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And from macro business, from the good Van Onselen, life, you know, this is because of their temporary bridging visas.
Right.
Where it's gone from 123,000 from it went from 107,000 in 2014 to 230,000, which is an increase of 123,000.
Yeah, for God's sake. This is why, like, even when they talk about the 30,000 cut, it is not even a cut in the end, when you consider all this other stuff, you know, that eclipses it.
That's, and then it goes from some polls, from recent ones, news poll, 56% want lower immigration, essential, 54% believe Australia's population is growing too fast, and 64% believe immigration too high. From Lowy, 54% of people think the total number of migrants is coming to Australia each year is too high. News poll, 74% of voters support the coalition government's cut of more than 10% to the annual permanent migrant intake. From CIS, 65% in the highest income decile and 77% in the lowest income believe immigration should be cut or paused until infrastructure quarter. And that's CIS. That's a fucking Center of Institutes. A Center of Independent Studies, which is, you know, a fucking Coke, like, get up thing.
That was which is Tim Wilson's old outfit, yeah. I believe.
It was either that or the IPA.
I think it was Center of Independent
Studies. It makes so much sense it was Tim Wilson, the IPA, because of that. Just make the IPA makes you gay.
Yeah, because of the estrogen producing quality of hops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, CIS, you know, and that's 65 in the highest income decile. So that's, like, even the rich want fucking immigration cut. So I wonder who the hell is this group that's, like, wanting an immigration increase. I wonder who.
Yeah, well, dude, like, I was at the GP's earlier today.
Mm.
The amount of foreign doctors there, like, eclipsed the amount of Australian doctors.
Yeah.
Even these higher income earners, these people which are performing skilled labor, their jobs are under threat now as well. There's a part of me that says, like, okay, now you know how it feels. Yeah. But at the same time, they're like, it's creating more empathy for the working class who have been putting up with this for decades now, yeah. You know? So it's not surprising that people of higher incomes are starting to want this.
Yeah. And from ANU, only 3 out of 10 Australians believe the nation needs more people. News poll, 80% of New South Wales voters do not want the state's population to increase. And from the Australian Population Research Institute, 72% of voters say Australia does not need more people. 50% want immigration to be reduced.
Bloody earth.
Instead of juking the immigration, and the end ends with, instead of juking the immigration statistics of transitional bridging visas, the Morrison government should simply listen to the wishes of the electorate and halve immigration intake back to historical levels. I'm not holding my breath, though. And neither am I, Leaf.
Yeah, and by the way, like, looking at how high those numbers are across income groups, you can bet your ass there's a hell of a lot of Labour voters there, you know? I wouldn't mind betting that the majority of Labour voters would want at least a freeze on immigration. Or,
what did fucking Fitzy get in his district? He had like a 20% One Nation vote increase.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know. It's kind of surprising at all that Labour has a regional seat. I believe they only have 5, yeah. With Hunter being the only safe one.
Well, I'm just wondering what the hell they consider regional.
Well, yeah.
Do they consider, like, Brand, which is, like, Rockingham over here, regional? Which is, like,
no. I'm not sure. I mean, look, I definitely know that Hunter is nothing like Kennedy, for example.
No.
I really hope... I don't know about this, but, you know, if Albo actually does want to gain any more traction, he does need some appeal to regional Australia, you know? Labour Party didn't do too badly with them before, you know? Now they just kind of, it's like it's a write-off, you know, they just don't, they barely say a thing about them.
Well, I mean, it was a pretty decent article from something here about, like, the actual collapse of WA's Labor vote, not just across the past few elections, but since, like, the 80s when Bob Hawke was in, and, like, Labor was had a, you know, a good 55 two-party percent. Now they have a 45.
Yeah, I heard Jonesy actually talking about that the other day. How it's collapsed here. All right. Do we have anything to say on George Pell, whose appeal started this morning at time of recording?
Well, no, I mean, I was really just surprised that they were streaming it. I mean, it's not really often you get these trials streamed. I mean, like, the last one I can remember was Zimmerman.
Yeah, I know.
And then, like, when you had the really famous first show trial, which was, you know, the Eichmann trial.
Yeah. A lot of the detail of this is kind of boring, to be honest, because they're talking literally about like the architectural layout of the cathedral and stuff like that. But I did see that the judges who are presiding over this case were actually taken there the other day. They did a walkthrough, and some people were actually saying that, like, when they did it with, like, a security entourage when the place was empty. And they're like, nah, they should have gone through there when the place was full, because it was said to have been full at the time when, you know, the assaults took place. And that's part of the defense's argument. They're like, there was just too many people there, with too many people walking in and out of that room when, you know, the abuse was alleged to have occurred.
Exactly.
But the other thing about it is, like, you know, I'm basically of the opinion that he's guilty, and I agree with the defense's argument that given, like, the coincidences that would have all have had to have lined up for this to have occurred without anyone noticing it, it's just virtually impossible, you know?
What, Pell's guilty?
That it's basically impossible that he could have done it without being caught, you know, without anyone at, you know, during that procession witnessing it, you know, because remember the witness is just from one person.
Yeah.
One of the other boys and the other one's dead. Yeah. I think from a heroin overdose actually. Now, like I think I've said, go back and listen to our episode on Pell, but like, I'm convinced that like those two boys were abused, you know, especially given their history of like depression and substance abuse and all that. I don't doubt it. But I think they're just trying to pin it on Pell as a scapegoat because he's like the leader of the church in Australia, you know. That's actually a very common coping mechanism that abuse victims implement, you know, to kind of deal with it. But the other thing is, don't think, however, that like, even though he has a very strong argument on his side, that he's actually going to get off. Like,
no.
The kind of commentary I'm reading is that this is about 50-50, because not only do the judges have to be convinced that he's innocent, but they have to be convinced that the jury made a mistake.
Well. Yeah.
So, you know, because that's what an appeal process is. You have to say that the jury made, like, procedural errors and that kind of thing. Not only that he's innocent, but that the jury fucked up, you know? That makes it that much harder. So, yeah. What is more promising, though, is that this is not a jury verdict. I would think that given the high-profile nature of George Pell as obviously our most senior Catholic cleric and quite possibly our most senior religious figure in the country, that this should have been a judge-presided trial from the beginning. The problem is the initial trial in the state of Victoria, by law, has to be a jury trial. I think that is antiquated given the absolute media frenzy that surrounds high-profile cases like this. And when you have high-profile cases, and when you have a very biased media, because there is no doubt that the media, particularly Channel 9 and the ABC, were basically running these media campaigns promoting Pell's guilt, that unfairly biases the jury. And therefore, it has to be a judge trial, I think. Those laws need to change. That's my opinion.
Well, I mean, Australia still... We still somewhat have, like, a decent, like judicial class, I will say. Not like America, wherever Trump does, like... Wherever Trump pisses, you know, there's someone filing an injunction.
Yeah, we're not as bad, yeah. And we don't have as, like, a litigious kind of court system either as America.
And even though, like, our Supreme Court is full of, like... feminists and like lesbians, they still rule in favor of like government immigration policy.
Even Justice Kirby was all right, you know. Even he's a flaming fag and everything.
And they've always tried to like that. Whenever you hear their like opinions on like challenging certain laws, they're always not as bad as you think. Even on 18C, they're always like, you know, it's a very mysterious law. It's a very misleading type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if that kind of thing wasn't in the power of the fucking government, then the fucking High Court could just strike that shit down.
Yeah. But also, like, because this is an appeal and a judge verdict, I don't think it'll actually be very long, till we get some news on this.
No. I mean, I think it was like only going to be like till tomorrow or something like that.
I think that's, yeah, I read that there's only 2 days of hearings, actually, and then you await the verdict after that, yeah.
And the thing I've been seeing like in every fucking Pell story is like this, you know, oh, because they're talking about sexual assault and this might trigger you, like people who've suffered sexual assault, PTSD. Here's the line to call if you are suffering.
Yeah, I know, which
is like so...
Yeah, which is totally just implying that he's actually guilty. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And
it's like, it's a, you know, it's these things, it's a crime that we're even having to discuss this because...
Yeah, well, I mean... Yeah,
well, they don't like you
right, yeah, yeah, I know, because it's the think of the victim mantra that they throw out. You know who was doing that? Was Christina Keneally.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you know this, like, she was a devout Catholic or something, and, you know, apparently is so appalled by what's going on that she's moved away from it.
Keneally, you're fine, you're a woman.
Yeah, but she was basically saying, she's like, don't insult the jurors, or particularly the victims of sexual abuse by questioning this verdict. Oh, for God's sake, what we're doing is questioning the process that went on, and like what I was saying there, the absolute media war against Pell and how that would have influenced the jury, as if they're not issues, okay? You have to look at this from a disinterested point of view. In other words, you need to leave your biases at the door and try and actually... analyze whether or not procedure was followed here, and I don't think it properly was. You know, that's the issue, okay? Take all the emotion out of all the victims, as horrible as it is, that's not the issue. The issue was due process followed, and I don't think so.
No, definitely not, was not. And then, yeah, you also got this, as you said, the thing about even discussing it is, like, offensive to them.
Mm.
Like...
No, it's all...
It's the same thing with these
just shutting down debate, saying no, this is too sensitive, therefore you can't talk about it.
It's also the same thing they do with hate speech. The same thing they do with like feminists in college with like college sexual assault claims and Brock Turner who did nothing wrong
and trigger warnings and jazz hands and all that kind of shit. Yeah, it's like you can't even do things like clapping because you might upset someone.
Yeah, someone who's deaf or something.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the bloody Chinese rat fuckers, as Kevin Rudd once called them, turning
I thought he loved the Chinese.
He said the Chinese are trying to rat fuck us. I think that's what he was saying, you know, the Copenhagen...
Well, you've been given permission to do it for a long time.
Yeah. So this was unusual. They turned up, and this was unannounced in Sydney Harbour, by the way. It was unannounced by our government and the Chinese government. Now... Scott Morrison has said that this was planned for some time and that it was a reciprocal visit, as Australian naval vessels had visited China recently, and the Chinese were returning from a tour of operations in the Middle East. And it was actually a counter-drug trafficking operation that's going on there. I assume that would be in that country that provides 90% of the world's heroin. It didn't provide anywhere near that amount before we invaded it, by the way.
Mm.
And in case you're wondering, yes, Australia still does have troops there. God knows why the fuck we do, but we do.
Yeah, it's almost like the Taliban and the Osama bin Laden weren't the enemy.
Yeah. But look, some people have been suggesting that the Chinese actually just turned up here without the Australian government...
knowing.
Even noticing, or even... yeah, even knowing about it. And they're saying it's like to kind of back up the tough talk on the South China Sea. And if you don't know, both major parties here oppose China's territorial claim over that area. Except for Sam Dastyari, of course. You remember that he made comments contrary to Labour Party policy after he had his travel allowance paid for by Chinese billionaires. Just to remind you why he left the
Senate. No, man, he was just principled.
Yeah, right.
He was just taking principled stance, man.
Yeah. Nonetheless, like, I don't like the Chinese here anyway. I just don't want them here even if it is a reciprocal visit. Well,
I mean, obviously they thought that was fine. They were turning up in Sydney. That's where
another Asian company country turned up.
Yeah.
But we actually sunk them, you know that, in World War II.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We sunk some...
But it's fine, you know, Sydney's a Chinese colony.
Well, that is very true, yes. They were over here doing some real estate deals, I think, actually.
Yeah. Oh, they really are just like another ethnic group.
Yes.
That woman, that tiger mum woman, is like right.
Okay, so...
Middlemen minorities, as some people call them.
Right. The Jews of the Orient.
Yeah. It's not wrong.
Speaking of Afghanistan, should we talk about these raids?
Yeah.
What was going on?
Yeah.
So we've had two sets of raids by the Australian Federal Police. Now, the one that happened this morning was at the ABC. So they turned up with a forensics team, I believe, and they're accessing their emails and their hard drives. I believe their hard drives are encrypted, and so they've actually hired people to break into them.
Mm.
So
I hope they're using fucking Linux.
Well, yeah. I hope they're government workers. Oh, maybe they've got some Chinese working for them now that are pretty good at that.
Well, speaking of, like, you know, that's another hacking story. You know, we've had this, the Australian National University hacked by the fucking Chinese.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting like 200,000 students and staff up at risk, for including their passport and bank details and academic records.
Right. So look, these raids actually...
I mean, I said this on Twitter, ANU's turning into an anus with all the leaking.
Yes, that is true. Bit of anal incontinence there that gay men disproportionately suffer from.
Surprised. Well, it's only homophobia they suffer from that.
Yeah. Right. So, look, these, why do they do this? These go back to a bunch of 2017 stories, actually, so they're a bit late here. And these are known as the Afghan Files. And these were covered by journalists Dan Oakes and Sam Clark, and it was allegations of unlawful killing of men, women, and children by Australian special forces in Afghanistan. Now... These are only allegations, of course. You know, I don't want to impugn our soldiers over there. I want them to come home, like, right now. But nonetheless, you know, if there's any kind of negative coverage of what the bloody hell we're doing over in Afghanistan, like, I basically welcome it, you know?
Mm.
I don't like to see our men and women... smeared for their operations over there. I mean, if they genuinely are committing crimes or whatever, then definitely I want that exposed. But this does seem like a kind of warning from Australia's, you know, Defence Department and certainly the Feds, saying, hey, you better watch out, you know, what you report, otherwise we're going to come over here and search all your stuff and interrupt your operations and everything. Yeah.
You know, this isn't the first fucking Australian journalist this has happened to. I mean,
what,
Julian Assange
and
Andrew Bolt.
Yeah, look, I think what happened to Andrew Bolt is the most, like, egregious attack on freedom of speech here. You know, because this, you know, I still think that there are, you know, particular national security grounds. For example, if a media outlet exposes the names of agents who are operating incognito, I think that's wrong. You know, that creates a direct security threat against those individuals and the operations they're performing. It's another question of whether or not they should be performing those operations. In the vast majority of cases, no. But, you know, putting their lives at risk is a different kind of thing. So, you know, stuff like this that's on national security grounds sometimes can be justified. In this case, I would say probably not. If you're, you know, blowing the whistle on what could be war crimes, you know, we need the media to be doing that, you know? The ABC having, like,
especially,
you know...
Especially when it comes to Israel's war crimes.
Yeah. But, you know, like, one thing that the ABC is somewhat good at on is, like, talking about Australia's pandering to US foreign policy and how not only do we not have any interest there, but our presence there is damaging. Both to us and the countries that we're in, you know?
Well, I mean, you can even take an example of that Indonesian free trade agreement that was upended just because Scott Morrison wanted to signal to the Jews in Wentworth.
There is that issue as well, yeah.
And I mean,
interesting now that, you know, the former ambassador to Israel has the seat of Wentworth.
Really makes you think after, like, Asia put the kibosh on that. Mm. It's like, oh, you want all these fucking cheap labor?
No.
Yeah, well, he's asking Scott Morrison. What's his name? Jockio is asking Scott Morrison. Now, you do want this cheap labor, don't you?
That's what makes me really torn on that issue. Yeah. You know? I hate to say it, man, but I think I would support moving our embassy there. At least that's only a symbolic thing, really. Yeah. You know? The last thing we need is any more cheap laborers over here.
Yeah. And I say, well, think about this. They're all going to be Indonesian Muslims, so and they're fucking based.
Yeah. Avi Yemeni would disagree.
Yes, he would.
Yeah. Okay, so look, the other raid was, where was it? Okay, so again by the AFP, and this was done at journalist Anika... Am I saying this right? Smethurst?
The News Corp one?
She is... I think she's News Corp, yeah. And then you've got broadcaster Ben Fordham. And he was a broadcaster from 2GB. Okay, so this... How do you say this woman's bloody name? Smethurst?
I'm going to say Smethurst.
Smethurst. Okay. So, yeah, she had a Canberra home raided by the AFP, and they had a warrant for it because of an unauthorized leak of national security information.
Well, I mean, it was also said it was over a 2018 report which revealed the Australian Signals Directorate was considering a plan to allow the government to spy on Australians, but, you know, it's behind a Daily Telegraph paywall.
Yeah, okay. So, look, her story, it included photographs of government documents, said the Home Affairs and Defence Departments were considering giving spy agencies greater surveillance powers. So I think the implication there would be, you know, like surveilling people without them knowing about it.
Mm.
Now, you know, with the encryption laws, like, you know, as
the
much as...
The metadata laws.
Yeah, which were actually put in place by Peter Dutton... I hate to say it, but, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised if they would go that step further with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the story alleged new powers that, if adopted, would go to the Australian Signals Directorate to secretly access bank records, emails, and text messages without leaving a trace. Okay? So, yeah, that is some Big Brother stuff. And, yeah, again, I want this kind of stuff reported. You know, I don't want...
I don't know, part of the reason, like, we are the way we are is because we see the globalist multicultural society is, like, is part of that has to be the surveillance state.
Right.
To, you know, spy on the distance of that, because no one's going to like it.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if, you know, no charges or whatever are laid against these journalists... Nonetheless, they're left intimidated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The thought of having Australian Federal Police and, like, forensics experts bloody trawl through your house and go through your fucking underwear and stuff, I mean, it's not very pleasant, I don't think, you know, particularly if you've got a family, you know? So this other guy, Ben Fordham, he was the one who revealed on 2GB... that there was six asylum seeker boats, like, attempting to reach Australian shores. And then basically, like, Home Affairs was upset about that because that was confidential information.
Bad update.
He basically just wasn't supposed to know about that. Here I'm a little iffier. It's like...
Well, it's like the other... I mean, I think this is... Because this Peter Dutton said he's had no knowledge of this. And, you know, I believe him. I think this is the AFP being a bit of the deep state right here.
It could well be. I mean, look, as we've covered before, no, there's many, like, bloody... Dutton reckons a lot of the leaks against him are from, like, Labor supporters within the Home Affairs Department.
Yeah.
And I don't doubt that for a second.
Oh, no, I mean, like, look, they... I mean, last year we had the you know, the little thing, the AFP raid on... What was it? It was either on itself or... It was on just something ridiculous. It was an ASIO or an AFP raid.
Oh, yeah, no, that was in the for the health union, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Michaela Cash, like, one of her members of staff, tipped off the media about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, this is just...
But yeah, no, I mean, look, all memes aside, no. Again, like, for God's sake, you don't need to go bloody through the guy's house, okay? Like, more than likely, as he was saying, that, you know, leaks from Home Affairs were just coming from bureaucrats. You don't need to go through someone's bloody hard drive and everything.
Yeah.
To like, where did he get this? You know what? It was probably like a 30-second phone call that he had with some like low-level bureaucrat from the department who got their hands on the information, you know?
Mm.
Most of the time, these people are smart enough not to send an email or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? And if you, even if you did find something, so what?
They
use a burner
phone, like, and they pay with cash and blah, blah, blah.
Like, in this age of, like, you know, digital media, it is extremely difficult to stop leaks, you know? And it's just a big... I mean, how much money would they be spending on doing these raids? Probably a shitload. It's just... it's not worth it. All right. Moving on from there. What else do we have? I really don't have much, actually. I wanted to just quickly cover this story that is getting very little coverage in the media. And that is that 200 daycare centres in New South Wales, and I might add, tended to be in inner southwest Sydney, southwest Sydney suburbs, have been shut down because of ties to Islamic State and motorcycle gangs. And if you want to know what motorcycle gang in particular...
Coffin cheaters, right?
No, the Comancheros.
Ah.
Okay. You know what the Comancheros are made up of, right?
I know what they're made of, but you might need to say that for the listeners.
Okay, Lebanese. Okay. They used to be just like every biker gang. It used to be... in fact, I think it was started by a Scotsman in Australia. Scottish-Australian bloke. But they've since been totally usurped by Lebanese. And some of their, like, muscle men... are Maoris and Pacific Islanders. But it's basically a Lebanese operation now. Those guys with the, you know, the really long rat's tails and that.
Yeah.
Up on the roids who, like...
known for, like, starting shit with the coppers and, like...
Yeah. And they're, like, the only male hairdressers left in the country. Well, by the way.
I've had a few. I had a few Anglo hairdressers, but that was when I was a kid.
Were they gay?
They didn't sound gay.
Like, oh, okay. Well, look... nowadays, they're either gay or they're, like, Lebanese, and it's just a barbershop that's a front for some operation.
Well, you see these, like, these barbershops, and they've got, like, the hairstyles that not even, like, Middle Eastern men can pull off. They've got the cornrows, and I'm like, and it's not on a black person's head.
Once when I was working in the city, I went to get a haircut after work. And, man, this guy, honestly, he was a roid case. The guy who was cutting my hair, he had fucking arms like Rich Piana. And this, this guy was cutting my hair. I couldn't believe it. Like, that was something else. But anyway, I hate to say it, but I think the reason why this got, like, no coverage is because these were all run by Muslims, mainly, like, Lebanese Muslims in Western Sydney. You know,
so come on, Lebs, you're supposed to be part of Hezbollah, not ISIS. Get work.
Yeah, yeah. And these were 200 centres. And, like, this comes at a time where we had, like, Shorten proposing, like, extra funding for childcare, you know, to get more women into the workplace so they can just drop their kids off and, you know, let the state and homosexuals and cat ladies take care of their kids. And now we've got this kind of shit going on. If you needed another reason to keep kids at a daycare, here it is, okay? You should keep them out of there anyway, or at least have them spend very, very little time there.
Or at least supervise them in the daycare.
Yeah, but my God, man, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of them were like, it was Muslims running the show here, okay? Like, this was incredible, and it got basically no coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, speaking of, like, southwestern Sydney, I mean, Salim Mahajir has, like, violated his bail conditions. And
who was that bloke?
He was that mayor for...
oh, yeah.
That was just, like, that corrupt Lebanese mayor who was just, like, always embezzling funds, had that really expensive wedding, and just... he was just acting like, you know, a rich Saudi.
Okay. Look, I know I've mentioned this before, but I just have to point out again, there is a Victorian Jewish mayor called Dick Grossman. Look that up if you don't believe me.
Is that a gross of a double S or a S-E?
Double S, I believe. Okay. And this guy is like, he also goes to like those Australian atheist conferences and shit, and he wears like these like clown suits and shit. And of course, like, because he's in one of these like inner suburban Melbourne shires, he goes on about how like the gang problem is not a Sudanese problem. You know? It's just a youth problem.
It's like social disenfranchisement and blah de blah.
Yeah, but like when he refers to them, they're always youths, you know? It's never even like of African appearance, it's just youths. All right. It is the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and Prime Minister ScoMo is over, jet setting, meeting all these like European leaders about that, and I'm suspecting we're going to get some more stuff on, we have to remember the Holocaust, and
climate change responsibilities and foreign aid responsibilities. Yeah.
But look, I was just going to say, this is like one of the other reasons why like Trump is over in Britain and Europe at the moment is because of this stuff. Like they're all gathering because of this.
Yeah.
I didn't have much else on that other to say, like, just be on the lookout for how many Holocaust survivors into their hundreds, even though they went through the most brutal death camp in world history, are still managing to hang on at these tender old ages.
Yeah, still hanging on to tell stories.
Yeah. Okay, just one other quick thing is that this Sunday will be Barry Cassidy's last ever show on Insiders. And David Spears from Sky News, who I believe is actually like one of the only guys who's like a Labour supporter on Sky News. You might see he's done like, you know, these somewhat iconic interviews with Labour legends like Bob Hawke and Paul Keating. And so he's moving over there. And I just wanted to quickly say that, like, you know, for a while, you know, unfortunately, Australia...
What do you mean we got a right? We don't have right-wingers on Media Watch. We have on Insiders. We have David Spears.
Well, no. I was going to say this actually kind of completes that transition where now, like, you know, because, you know, Andrew Bolt was like a regular on Insiders.
Yeah.
He hasn't been for a while. You get these other ones, but there's really kind of token middle ground ones who only ever kind of talk about economics. And that's people like Jared Henderson and, I forget that other guy's name, Pierce Ackerman. Who go on Insiders.
Oh.
But you don't get the more kind of, you know, I hate to say hard line, because Bolt's not really hard line, but he's perceived as such now, you know, and he has become more sympathetic to, you know, like Pauline Hanson and that. He talks a hell of a lot more about social issues now than he did before, you know. He still will talk about the evils of socialism and, you know, he'll talk about the Marxism conference in Melbourne and shit like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ABC is now largely devoid of any of these kind of commentators. The best examples are Q&A and The Drum. Particularly The Drum, I think, is just this fucking left-wing feminist wank fest now, you know? It's awful. But I was just also going to say that we're moving to more of, like, this sort of American-style media.
Yeah.
Where, like, the pretense of being fair and balanced is almost sort of being given up now by the ABC and Sky. And I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with that, other than the fact that the ABC's charter says that they can't be. They actually have to be balanced. Sky News, it's another story. But what's interesting is that, like, their journalists will actually go back and forth in kind of a tit-for-tat war. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like how Tucker does that with CNN and NBC.
With Don Lemon.
Yeah, Don Lemon. Yeah, that's right. We're starting to see that now, you know. Commentators like Bolt and Chris Kenny and Peter Credlin before would just sort of go back and forth. Oh, and another example is obviously Christina Keneally is not there anymore. So now we just have this sort of greater left-right dichotomy going on between
the
ODC.
Was she the one that like Bolt was like going off at, and that's why Bolt got kicked out of Outsiders?
Insiders, quite possibly. Outsiders is the bloody sports show with Waleed Ali, unfortunately. How boring is
that?
Well,
we had Mark Latham's Outsiders.
Oh, yeah, that's... Oh, is that maybe what you were talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you thinking of Latham? Or
yeah, why Latham got kicked out of it?
Latham made a comment about a...
Some woman.
No, about a student being gay.
Yeah.
He said that the student looked gay. And if you saw the student, he did, by the way. And that was it. And then, of course, he went to Rebel Media for a while and... I think
like, now he's back on.
I think he got a bit disillusioned with Ezra Levant.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's why he went from teaming up with Jews to teaming up with Lebs.
Right. I don't think it's any coincidence that that was when he was going through his libertarian to let's say alt-right pipeline.
What are you talking about, man? He's gone full striker.
You know what? Maybe he has.
I would
love to recommend some podcasts and some like articles for Latham to read. I would absolutely love it to like get on the piss with him and like say, man, you got to watch this, and this.
Well, I mean, the thing about it, he used that. He was cynically using that Lebanese woman who was like triggered at Milo, and then then his speech comes in, and then he's talking about like. You know, if you asked me when I came into Parliament 30 years ago, whatever it was, when I was asked to say who was the most oppressed person, I would have said a white male.
Yeah.
Who's just lost his job.
Right. No, but even back then, like, you know, Beasley, like, cared for those people, or at least his rhetoric, you know, would always discuss what was going on with those people, you know? Anyway, I was just going to say, like, I don't know if I like that sort of tit-for-tat thing going on. Like, when you have the, you know, both channels increasingly becoming more left-wing and conversely right-wing on Sky News, it becomes more of a war between personalities, you know, than it does about policy. And that's, like, one thing I don't like about American media. You know, where they just kind of have a tit for tat back and forth, you know. I've got to say this about this person and all that kind of thing, you know. Yeah, okay, it's fine for those two channels to kind of have different points of view, but, you know, I just hope it doesn't get too personal.
Well, yeah, and it also, like, starts a discussion that people get invested in, that because it's media, they're controlling that discussion.
Right.
And it's not going to go to ones that you want really want.
Yeah. I just had...
I mean, it takes some positive directions.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I actually just had one story, and it's a real quick one, and that was the RBA did cut rates.
Yeah.
Very, very lucky for the government that it happened after, because, you know, rate cuts are signs that the economy is slowing.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I saw Jim Chalmers...
Well, in our, like, current weird Keynesian economy that we have where... With the population Ponzi economy.
Right.
We cut rates to increase, like, investment.
I really want to start reading about modern monetary theory, actually, because, you know, since I got out of my Lulbert days, you know, I haven't paid that much attention to, you know, things like the RBA and rate cuts and all that kind of stuff. But I've seen that, like, now in another attempt to get people to buy his gold stocks... Peter Schiff has been going out, like, attacking modern monetary theory. I don't know if you've seen this.
No.
Getting his fucking ugly mug into the media again, just trying to rebuild the tattered reputation of Euro-Pacific capital. But anyway, Jim Chalmers, and this is why I was saying, like, he is actually a very slick speaker. He was going right on the attack here over the rate cut, talking about how, you know, they're just too low. And that this is going to drive housing prices down further, even though the coalition was saying that that was going to happen under a Labor government with their changes to negative gearing. But the interesting thing is that this is said to be our lowest quarter of growth since, I think it was September of 2009. And remember, that was really only a year after, you know, the GFC was hitting. So... You know, that's bad economic news. But look, considering we're right at the beginning of the coalition's term, this really is not going to have much of an effect unless we see this continue. You know, unless we see kind of poor economic times, then the government can actually point to successive periods of low growth or even negative growth. Remember the past quarter was in recession. However, sorry, it was negative growth. However, to get a recession, you need two consecutive quarters. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't even want to add to that. Like, wage increases have been, like, been terrible. Like, retail wages had the weakest pay increase of just
0.2%. Sorry, I should say Chalmers did mention that to his credit.
Yeah. STEM and professionals had biggest wage rise of 3.4%. And, you know, they've got, like, a little list. I mean, admin and support service, you know, just that's just, not, you know, kind of just like HR and all that crap. Education training is, like, besides professional, scientific and technical and mining, you know, the three is, like, admin at 1.9, education training at 1.6, and mining's at 1.5, and next is arts and rec at 1.5. And then you've got...
I don't care about that.
Yeah, construction at 0.8, which is, you know, pretty bad signs for a fucking recession. Pretty good indicator for a recession. Then you've got accommodation, food, 0.8, healthcare, 0.7, and retail workers. And I want to say, like, food services, healthcare, and retail, they're, like, being known as, like, the ones that get all the immigration. You know, you get your foreign nurses, and then you get your Indians at the McDonald's or the servo station.
Yeah, and very often that Indian at the servo station has a bloody degree in mechanical engineering or something.
Yeah.
You notice this? They're starting now to kind of get their foot in the door. They're not just the Uber drivers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think, like I was talking about this earlier, to really get the wake-up call, we need the elites to start recognizing it. Mm. So, you know, I hope they get out of those jobs and start moving up the ladder. And they need to start taking these middle and upper class jobs. You know what I mean? Yeah. We need to red pill these people. I'm sorry, but, like, you know, the middle class can have a tendency to be very out of touch. And what you need is you read my mind. That was the exact video. That's one of his great broadcasts, actually.
Yeah,
where he talks about how, like, you know, they're, you know, a disgrace to America in kind of opening the borders without suffering the consequences themselves. They need to start feeling the consequences a little bit.
Yeah. All right, I'll finish quickly on nuclear power. I mean, the Nationals wanted to bring it back. Well, put forward a motion in the Senate to investigate using it. Obviously, that's going to get support from Bernardin and Pauline. And, like, but the Libs, you know, are always wishy-washy with nuclear. Chalmers saying it's not a good idea. I invite them now to put their hands up for which communities they would like to see nuclear power stations built in, rather than just being thought bubbles or opposition to respond to. The onus is on them to outline their plans for nuclear stations for our suburbs.
That is ridiculous, man. I remember... Yeah,
because, I would love to have a nuclear station next door.
Yeah. I'll just quickly say, Mark Latham, he went on the record saying, yes, he supports that. Someone went on Twitter, oh, I'd like to see Mark Latham support it being built in his, and he's like, go right ahead.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll move to the only one that we have if that pleases you.
Yeah.
There's no CO2 emissions. And also the shit about, like, acid rain, by the way, it just doesn't fucking happen.
Acid rain happens from fucking normal pollution.
Yeah, it does. Honestly, man, I would live next door. I mean, besides, like, the noise, if you're talking about environmental hazards, there are basically zero living next door to a plant.
No. It's not like Flint's water.
Yeah.
And, like...
All right. There is living next to a fucking wind turbine, though.
Yeah. Somehow, those infrasonic sound waves or whatever it was. All right, so last thing I just want to talk about, you know... Funny story from the ABC was internet brides. After 7,000 people moved to Australia on prospective marriage visas each year. And for recent years, there's been spikes in abuse claims. With reports women have been held captive... So since 2010, the biggest numbers have been women arriving from the Philippines, Vietnam, China, Cambodia, and Thailand, obviously. So, you know, the boomers are, you know, getting their foreign brides. You know, you're on watch.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
I'll just talk about that little point about China. Yeah, about China and the visit. Do you think this is about like also about Trump's tariffs and also about Morrison just pledging to give like $250 million to Pacific Island nations again?
Look, quite possibly. The way I see it is Morrison, he does not like this trade war because he thinks it's going to have reverberating effects here.
Yeah.
And that basically means he doesn't like what Trump is doing. He doesn't like the retaliatory tariffs and further protectionism that China is putting in place.
Well, but the thing
I do think that it's going to basically blame Trump. I think it's kind of beneficial
if China like does that, because then if they're doing it to America, they have to come to funny weird thing is they would have to come to Australia for like resources.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say,
which could be good.
Yes,
if you weren't fucking importing them and giving them away for nothing.
The other thing is, like, I think there's a lot of credibility to, you know, some economists, they talk about a Chinese collapse,
yeah,
you know, being, well, yeah, right around the corner. We are fucked if that happens.
Yeah,
Australia is fucked, you know. They were our lifeboat during the GFC.
Absolutely.
You know? I don't think it was Swanee's stimulus.
No.
I think it was basically our trade with China.
I don't see how giving us $700 each could have, like, done that, saved an economy.
900, yeah. Including to dead people. And electrocuted apprentices installing pink bats.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we need to really kind of, dare I say, diversify, you know, who we're trading with. And, yeah, I think we need to kind of go back to traditional trade partners and start moving away from China. It's basically like, you know, having a hedge fund, you know.
Maybe
I mean?
We should consider trading with Russia or,
yeah,
Iran.
Bloody oath.
Venezuela.
Absolutely. Even. In any case, we need to start taking at least some of our eggs out of the China basket because, yeah, no, I believe if you look at, like, already how their property market is being affected, and this is part of the reason why they buy so much of our fucking property.
Exactly.
It's very volatile at the moment. And yeah, if they have a fucking collapse soon, I would not be the least bit surprised.
Well, the good thing for them is like, with them. They've already built the cities that they can get deported to.
Yes, they have a bit of refuge here. Yes, true.
Yeah.
And they're bloody used to being crammed in like cans of sardines as well. So yeah. It's not a big lifestyle change.
And also with this spy thing, I forgot to mention that News Corp during that time has announced 50 jobs cut, which, you know.
Yeah.
Wonder like how much that would actually is going to affect their journalism. As we've said before, like News Corp is okay when it's actually talking about something.
Yeah.
And not surrounded by celebrity gossip.
Yes, that's true.
All right, I'm finished.
Okay, I'm done too. We're back now. Like, now that we're out of the election cycle, I think we're back to just sort of the around the hour mark for our yeah. podcasts.
On the hour.
Yes, yeah, nice and punctual. So thank you for listening to episode 33 of The Racist War, and we'll see you next week.
See you.